100%.
And I'm recording.
Excellent.
But your phone vibrated, so fix your life.
Oh, fucking CNN update right now. Okay, whatever. Okay. I came across some Sailor Jerry recently that I did not drink, but it took me back to just like really bad nights in college. I don't know. I feel like I haven't drank spiced rum like of my choosing since I was probably like 20, 21.
What an interesting spirit to have ruined as a young person that like wasn't ruined for me. Like spiced rum was not an early onset. Why was that an early one for you?
It feels like I think that I assumed that everyone it was ruined for because it was like Jack and Coke times, like in college. And I worked at a restaurant where, like, of course, restaurant culture, like you get drunk with the people that you work with constantly.
Sure, sure.
And so they always had Sailor Jerry at those parties. And then I had a roommate also who was very into Sailor Jerry. And so we always had it at our place. And it was just like, I don't know. The first time I was like drinking a lot in, I don't know, in my own home and getting really sick. So it's, it just, I don't think that I could ever drink it now. It would be like a, feel like an allergy.
Oh, wow. No, that's real. It's so funny to me because like I love this, how like a certain drink can take you nostalgically to a place. Mm-hmm. Like PSA, at the time of this recording, we are still very much quarantined on day God knows what at this point. But there's like a local bar that was doing their mixes that you could like buy like their signature cocktail known as the Breezy and also Paloma. Mm-hmm. And they're also selling bottles. Shout out to Asterio, truly my favorite bar that's not a restaurant in the city of Chicago.
And it anyway, is excellent. Yes,
I love it there. Okay, so I swooped in and did that, and I was like, oh god, this like cocktail takes me to like, I have some nostalgic memories about it. It really takes me like in a place and to a lot of times, and I just, it feels right. That said, there's like stuff where you're like, oh, I drink this specific beer and it tastes like the summer of like 2012. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, Miller High Life. That summer. Right. Listen, whatever it is. But it's funny how like drinking certain shit young ruins it for you.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Spiced rum is not on my ruined for me like youngster list. But I do think it's why.
Vodka's ruined for me too.
I was going to say, I do think it's why I don't really drink vodka.
Yeah, it's too many, like, vodka lemonades in a dorm room. Ugh.
I was going to say, like, I just, like, it was, yeah, I just, I think.
I had a vodka Dr. Pepper at the Kentucky Derby
once. Oh, my God.
It was rough.
Ew.
It was bad.
I mean, just, like, bad vodka is so bad,
Pop-off?
But also so readily available. Shout out to you, Kamchatka. that, like, it's really, like, the, I mean, it's something, I don't understand how more people, like, don't ditch vodka in their, like, 20s and 30s who, like, drank Kamchatka in a dorm room at, like, 19. Like, I don't
fully adult
get
vodka
it.
Drinkers do blow my mind.
I question it. Like, I like it in a cocktail, but I personally would never hit a vodka soda. And I either assume that the people drinking them, like, either never drank young, and so it wasn't ruined for them.
Maybe they're from Russia.
They're straight up from Russia. That's a fourth option. Okay, I love that one. Right? Or, like, just somehow, like, it's, like, purely motivated by, like, caloric intake.
Yes.
In which case,
I was gonna
you
say
should
it's
be
a
drinking
diet
gin.
Alcohol drink.
Sorry.
And, yep, you should.
I mean, you should. Just one woman's opinion.
And a gin soda is a little, I don't know, it's a little better. Vodka is so, I don't know.
Listen, I'm sorry to the vodka drinkers out there. I'll consume it in a cocktail, but I don't consider like a vodka soda like with a splash of pineapple a cocktail if that's the lifestyle you're living.
Mm-mm.
I mean, we can't. Do you have any other spirits that were ruined for you or beers as a youngster?
I don't think any other ones were ruined, but I do really love and want to find again, although I do think they might make me sick, Buzz Balls. I don't know if I ever made you try
those. I don't even know what that is.
It is like too long to explain right now, and maybe I'll do a whole episode on the creation of Buzz Balls. Actually, file that away. I would love to do that because it's kind of
that's a whole interesting story that
I can't tell right now, but they're like, they look like Christmas ornaments, but they're like a flat can on the top and bottom. So they're like about the size of, or like a billiard ball.
Okay.
And they're like really cute, just like fat little cans. They're like adult huggy drinks, and they're all like very alcoholic, and they all have like different alcohols in them, and they're called clever things like strawberry rum job, for example.
Of course.
And I don't know. It's surely just alcohol, but maybe it's like the blend of what kind of alcohols. Anytime I've had them, myself and the people that I'm with have all experienced like just a really intense, fast onset drunkness and also like a lot of energy. And maybe it's just because they're so sweet also.
I was going to say it's that they have massive amounts of sugar in them. That's my guess.
Yeah. So like my family had them on Thanksgiving, and then my dad started doing like laps around the house in his pajamas.
that checks out. I love your dad.
And it does. It does check out. And then you crash real hard like a little kid after like too much Kool-Aid. So I don't, we'll do an episode on Buzz Balls sometimes. They were invented by a teacher when she was sitting by the pool, and it's a whole dumb thing.
I mean, honestly, speaking of Buzz Balls and speaking of childhood huggies, which take me full to the nostalgia of finishing a soccer game. On that note, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome. Don't cut your lip on the foil.
And then I get like a little misty, and I'm like, should I be caring more about animals than like people?
But it doesn't have to. He licks all the beakers and flasks and tubes until he finds it.
No. Are you making this up?
I'm not. This is how it was discovered. Hands-on in the field experience to hydrate youths.
Which I know you're like, great, Austin. So you're drinking that fake water again. This month in December, please stop douching your genitals.
Soul searching to find their true self.
I mean, that is this podcast, so it's something we can all enjoy together. Oh, welcome to Why Are You Like This? Don't cut your lip on the foil. Oh, truly, I mean, that's truly advice we can all enjoy. Listen, Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast where, whether you're quarantined or not, you can listen to us dissect some part of our culture, human behavior, pseudoscience, psychology, maybe a little bit of real science, or just like whatever phenomenon we're noodling at any given time. And we do so all in the quest of determining why people are the way that they are. That is Jamie Ryan doing laps in her pajamas with her dad on Christmas, post a Buzz Ball in Cincinnati.
And that's Austin Williams.
Hello.
That's Austin Williams, who I will force to drink a Buzz Ball at some point in Chicago.
I would drink one. I would do that with you.
Yeah, they're kind of hard to find sometimes. They have them a lot at like drive-through gas stations, you know.
Pony kegs if you're from the greater Cincinnati area.
That's a good choice. I once went to 3 different liquor stores in California to try to find them. So sometimes they're hard to come by, but what a night, let me tell you.
Time to be alive.
However, tonight, this morning,
we're not talking about the alcohol that you ruined at 19, unfortunately. Although, I mean, I would talk about that ad nauseum if someone wanted to.
I would, too. We could do a whole aversions episode sometime.
I can't believe you ruined spiced rum. I'm like, who are you friends that people were like at 19? They're like, let's get drunk off spiced rum.
It's
I'm like,
tattoo what? People. It was because it's like young people who are like trying to lean into tattoo culture.
They just like the branding of the label. It's truly judging a book by its cover.
Pirate friends. Yeah, you know. You know what?
Sailor Jerry. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I still do enjoy like a cider with spiced rum, but I think that's the only I think that's the only drink I would have that in.
Okay, heard. I see you. I respect it.
Unless someone can make a really clever cocktail, then I'm open to it.
Okay. Listen, taking suggestions now. Let us know. But to that point, we are not talking about any of this tonight. So what are we talking about?
Okay, we're kind of rolling off the heels of last week's 90s nostalgia, or a previous week's 90s nostalgia talk. And also previously this season we talked about Burnout. So
sure did.
This will be a bit of a thematic continuation of both. How
could
that
be? I love that when we have a through theme. Yeah, take us to 90s and to Burnout. Feels right. Okay.
So tonight we'll be talking about work culture, job dissatisfaction, and quarantine work feelings. Mm-hmm. And to get us rolling into that, I'd like to tell you the story of the rise and fall of the Lisa Frank empire.
Oh, shit. Wow, Lisa.
Yeah.
Like, my girl, I was about this Trapper Keeper life. Say more.
I did not have any of her Trapper Keepers, and I know you mentioned in the previous episode that you did and you were about it, but I just never, I don't know, it didn't call to me. I didn't like it.
I was all about this life. I'm ready. Let's lean into it.
Okay. So basically, I want to take you through like what happened with Lisa Frank and like how she came to be, why the company ultimately failed. And through that story, kind of lead us into talking about maybe some terrible jobs that we've had or maybe some changing feelings about a workplace. So without... Without further ado, a lot of this comes from a Jezebel article from 2013 called Inside the Rainbow Gulag, the Technicolor Rise and Fall.
Oh, damn. Lisa, rise and fall? Okay, doesn't rise seem like it's going to end well for her. Let's go for it.
Okay, so I'm going to take you through the Lisa story. So Lisa was a young and talented artist in high school. She was finding her passion at a privileged private high school where her classmates were the Romneys. So like Mitt Romney and his future wife.
Oh, fuck. I love this. Oh, my God. This is the cultural information you didn't know you needed, that Lisa Frank went to high school with the Romneys.
In high school, she
specifically she went to school with Mitt or Mitt's children. I just need clarification.
Mitt and his wife.
Wow. I'm sorry. This is not a thing I thought we were going to hear up top, and I'm already thriving. Let's hit it.
I mean, get fucking ready. Okay. So she sold her first piece of artwork in high school for $3,000.
For just a second, based on how you said, like, let's get it. I thought you were going to say she sold her first child. Anyway, sorry. No. Let's carry on.
What if she had? Everything would be so disappointing now since you set that bar. Let me just go ahead and say she's not going to sell a child.
No, she's not selling kids. That wouldn't be disappointing. We don't want children sold.
I don't either.
So this, we have compassion for asshole children now. Shout out to the attachment theory episode. Anyway, Lisa Frank, the Romneys, carry on. Okay.
So in high school, she sold her first piece of artwork, and it sold for $3,000, which in the 70s also is like a shitload of money.
I mean, it basically is like $100,000 in the 70s.
You do the math.
You do the math on your own. I'm sure there's a calculator you could find via Google. Okay, there carry is. On.
And so she often would cite that like as her first sale and like in maybe in a little bit of like a bragging way that like as a high school student, she was able to sell like artwork of a $3,000 level.
I mean, if I sold a piece of artwork in not the 70s, but like when we graduated high school in the like later aughts for $3,000, I too probably would have bragged about it. So let's give her grace.
Well, the thing that I want to say is remember where she's going to school. She's like really with like some 1%
children. Yeah, she's with the Romneys. Okay. Yeah, fair.
And the person who bought it was a family friend and a parent of a fellow student at that school who purchased her work. And he was like the CEO of like a large company. So
what you're trying to lean into is like this chick might suck a little bit.
I'm just saying like we just have to take a look at the privilege and kind of tamper the accolades. That's all.
Okay, let's tamper them.
And yeah, okay. So she's a young entrepreneur, though, with dreams. And after high school, she went to college and she started her... So she goes to art school and she started her first business, which was purchasing artwork from Native Americans on reservations in Arizona, where she went to school, and then selling them in Michigan when she went home for, like, a high markup.
Feels not good. Yeah, it doesn't feel like the kind of curatorial situation that I would try and endorse. No.
Then she started telling the Native Americans what to paint on the pottery that she was buying. So then they were like taking orders, and she was like telling them to put like unicorns and kind of like Lisa Frank-esque, or what would become Lisa Frank imagery,
right,
onto these pieces that she would then sell in Michigan. So I don't know.
Lisa. Okay. I don't like where this is going. She basically could have started a beautiful, like, fair trade, like, mm-hmm. consumer to, like, channel, but, like, was not doing that, but was just doing, like, it in, like, the dark, dirty way as, a one-woman enterprise. I don't love it. Okay.
I don't love it either. It's an entrepreneurial spirit, and she's an artist. And I want to underline that, like, Lisa Frank, throughout this story, is, let's remember, not a businesswoman, really. Although she attempts to be, she's an artist.
And I also, I am having this moment where I was like, yeah, I would have fucking been on it, like, as a high schooler at that young age, if I had sold something for $3,000. And then you were like, yeah, but, like, these are, like, the one percenters. And I was like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, I didn't come from that kind of privilege, so it would really ring differently. And then I was like, wow, who would have thought that, like, the trapper keepers and folders of my youth were, like, really birthed out of, like, a lot of privilege to, like, just get to, like, Photoshop the hell out of stuff. And then I went, and then I had also this moment while you're talking that I was like, how would we think anybody could actually market something so outlandish and not come from a great deal of privilege?
Yes. Thank you. I had that same kind of, like, revolution when, like, reading all of this.
Wouldn't have ever reached popularity. I don't know. Anyway, I'm already there. Shorty, take me. Sean Kingston, let's go. Okay.
Okay, so then Lisa marries a man named James Green, who was later the CEO of the Lisa Frank company, Lisa Frank Inc.
I hate it when creative women make their husbands their CEOs.
Oh, that's, it's my hella platform. Problematic.
I'm stepping off. Anyway.
Yeah, okay. This company's culture is just, as we go through this, you'll see, just riddled with issues. So
great.
So Lisa Frank, when she was 25, right after college, she got her first $1 million order from Spencer's. Remember Spencer's?
Oh, I feel like we mentioned Spencer's on a recent episode in terms of in the likeness with Hot Topic and Rites of Passage at the mall as a teen. Carry on.
So at that point, she was making stickers and buttons of those animals that we're all familiar with. And then she got some licensing for, like, Betty Boops and shit. She started putting, like, Betty Boops on unicorns, and then Spencer's was buying them. And so that was the beginning of Lisa Frank's kind of, like, cartoon enterprise.
And was it, you know, even though Betty Boop was licensed, was it, like, Lisa Frank branded at that point in time? Do you know?
That was, yes, Lisa Frank branded. And I don't know, like,
interesting. Okay.
The logistics of how, like, buying the rights or, like, temporary rights or licensing something works for your own artwork.
Sure.
But yeah, she did that anyway.
Noted.
So then we move into the heyday, which is kind of the Lisa Frank time as we remember it in elementary school. So Lisa Frank's empire was booming. It was centralized in Tucson, and it employed tons of artists from Tucson and the universities and art schools around there. A lot of recent graduates would come and work for Lisa Frank. However, they had a super high turnover rate, which is not surprising given some of the information I'm about to give you. But at the factory, if you will, there was an emphasis on productivity, but it was a silent office. You were not allowed to talk to coworkers. There were to be no...
Okay. Keep going.
Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, these are illustrators. This is supposed to be like a creative environment. So silent office, no talking, no visitors, including family. There were to be...
No visitors I'm fine with. No talking, it's like weird.
It's keep very, going. Very weird. So you were not allowed to wear heels, like no high-heeled shoes. And that was James Green, CEO slash Lisa Frank's husband, said the reason why he didn't allow heels was because women wearing heels couldn't keep up with him when they were like talking and walking. But it was actually because he was really short and he had like Napoleon complex feelings. And so no one was allowed to wear tall shoes.
That, I'm like, get a life, bruh, bruh.
Yes, okay. Yes. He's a very small man in many ways. We'll get into it. But
and clearly very insecure.
Yeah, one time, speaking of James Green, he found out that an employee had left 10 minutes early, and he had padlocks put on all of the doors to the building so that, quote, the staff can't escape. That is literally a direct quote.
Okay. I'm sorry, but can we just have a triangle shirtwaist factory moment on that one? That's how people died and how, yes, like, workers' rights became a hot moment in this country. I mean, look, you're laughing and, like, you probably should because that's ridiculous.
It's absurd.
A triangle shirtwaist factory, mm-hmm, when that, mm-hmm, fire, when that people died because they were locked in.
Yes, and then there were
this
changes.
This is why
and rules
unions exist. Jesus Christ. And what decade was this? He was locked
in. This is in the
90s. Offices?
In the 90s.
I don't even understand. Okay. Okay.
I know. So a lot of these rules were kind of just like ever changing, and like new ones would pop up just like whenever. And one of my favorite things is that the way that these new rules were announced was through an inner office memo that looked like a newspaper, and it was called Frankly Speaking.
I like the name. That's the only thing I've heard I've liked so far. I'm into it. That's a good name for Lisa Frank, Frankly Speaking. I like that.
It's decent, but she's a terrible person. And this was like just a fear-inducing item. Like it would hit everyone's desk and just like tell them that like all the things they weren't allowed to do anymore.
If she didn't suck, the syntax is on point. Okay, keep going.
Well, if she didn't suck, yes. I would probably maybe have an adult coloring book or something, but she's not even making them right now, and we'll get to that. But
oh, okay. All yeah, right. Hello.
So I would like to read just a little quote from Marsha, who was a one-time graphic designer for Lisa Frank, Inc.
Marsha. Go ahead.
She said that there was just this air of fear there. It seemed very clear the mentality of it was to keep it ice cold, keep people miserable and on the edge. It was just insane. Totally insane. So
have you ever worked like you, Jamie Ryan, in an environment where either fear was like a sometimes theme or an all the time theme?
Yes. There is a restaurant that I worked at in California like that.
I have worked at a place where fear was like a wavering kind of constant steady theme, and I'll say this, nothing good comes of that.
No
one works well when they're afraid.
Absolutely not. There's an excellent Parks and Rec moment where Jerry has to file like 100 files as fast as he can for Ron, and Ron's like being very mean and like tells him that he's very mean about it, and then Chris has Jerry file the same amount, but gives like no pressure and just gives like positive like feedback and praise.
Jerry, he does it faster.
Jerry filed the files for Ron a lot faster, but he filed most of them incorrectly because he was afraid. And so they had to be redone, mm-hmm, because he couldn't focus. He filed less files for Chris, but they were all done correctly. So yeah, an air of fear is not a productive environment.
As notated by Parks and Recreation.
And welcome. Thank you for letting me just go ahead and tell that whole scene. Sorry about that.
I loved it.
Thank
beautiful.
You. Thank you. So the decline of the Lisa Frank company, obviously they had like a boom through the 90s. They were popular enough that their corporate culture didn't totally sink the ship yet. But as obviously the trend, like every trend has a peak, and Lisa Frank couldn't stay super popular for forever. We see the workplace like decline in an insane way. So the staff turnover, for example, there was one creative team that was staffed with 40 people. And in 3 years, they had three full turnovers of a 40 person staff. So like whatever 40 like, times three is like how many people came through that one team.
120.
Yeah. Thank you.
Just a little bit of quick math. Okay.
Yeah. So like 120 employees in 3 years getting cycled through one team.
Wow.
Yeah. Just
that is
because everyone's miserable. Yeah. And it had a horrendous reputation in Tucson. Apparently it was like a notorious workplace and everyone knew that like Lisa Frank was just like an evil, evil person. A lot of
I hate that because I hate it too. That's not in line with the art, and also the fact that it's. I hate when people are like asshole bosses, but they're making products for children.
Mm-hmm. It feels especially like it feels terrible. Wrong. Yes,
it's like I don't want candy manufacturers to be especially evil because the target market is children. Right. I don't want whoever is like making, you know, baby toys. I don't want that person to be an asshole. I don't want whoever was running Fisher Price in the 90s to be an asshole. I don't know if they were, but it feels bad.
It feels bad. It has like a negative juju on it. But a lot of staff members had to sue for their last paycheck. Lisa Frank.
Okay, well, that's fucked up if you work really the hours and you're not getting paid. Hello.
Yes. So after people left, it would just be like a straight up like cut, like just no contact. People had to sue for unemployment benefits and for severance packages that they had like in writing. Just like they couldn't get them. Lisa Frank Lisa Frank Inc. was also sued by multiple construction contractors. They refused to pay $4 million in construction costs. So like they had like this giant unicorn and panda and shit like built all around like the office. And it was just like this massive complex of these creatures and shit. And it cost $4 million. And they just straight up didn't pay for it.
Sounds like some other people I've heard of in recent history. Anyway.
It does indeed. It does indeed. So I'd like to just read you a couple quotes now from some former employees.
Hit me with it.
I personally heard Lisa Frank scream at sales managers and threaten their lives if they fucked up a presentation.
Threaten their lives?
They could have caught on with the hipster market, but in order for a company to really turn a corner with those kinds of things, they need compassionate leadership and people who appreciate and can nurture talent, said Jacob, who served as an illustrator for the company for 4 years. They didn't have either of those. And that, in particular, I think is why they could not have like a resurgence with kind of like hipster, like 90s resurgence. Is just because the corporate culture, like, they can't get employees to do that right now. Another quote. It was the silliest setup I've ever seen. Of course, from the outside, it's colorful. You've got the rainbow, the stars, the hearts on the building, the statue of a panda. But inside...
Oh, yeah, I'm here about the panda statues. Carry on. Okay.
But inside...
My eight-year-old self is swooning.
I know, right? I want to go there. But inside, it was like an abusive alcoholic home.
Oh, fuck.
Another one. I don't think Frank and Green had a lot of business acumen, said Karen. I don't think they ever did. I think Lisa's parents funded the start of her company. She's an artist, not a business person.
Well, that seems factual and diplomatic, whoever gave that quote. Okay.
Karen.
Good job, Karen, if that is your real name.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the information that this Jezebel article gave is anecdotal and it is from former employees. And so like, I don't know, you have to take that with a grain of salt, but also like I mostly believe them. Like maybe some people are exaggerating stories, but like, for example, many employees said that CEO James Green would send employees on Coke runs and also runs for Viagra and porn. So just like send them with cash, like to a location to come back with those three items.
I mean, this harkens back to the Napoleon shit you're saying. That I'm like, that's a power play. He didn't actually need those people to run that errand. That's like disgusting.
No, he did not need people to run that errand. And it is disgusting.
It's fucked up.
Just a little note about workplace culture. Lisa Frank, James Green, and their vice president, who was named Rhonda, were apparently all coked out of their minds most of the time. So that will bring the tension up.
The 90s, cocaine, that's a whole nother episode in a special way. But also, like, what? I just... Also, the fact that her other person up top is named Rhonda feels right. Yeah, I just... That feels right. It was either Rhonda or, you know, Barbie's friend Skipper. Mm-hmm. Like, that... Either one of those would have been appropriate. Okay, okay.
So let's talk more about Rhonda, actually. So
let's do... Help me, Rhonda. Help me, Rhonda. In the words of... The Beach Boys. Okay.
Thank you. So James Green and Rhonda did have a sexual relationship.
And... Oh my God, James Green, little Napoleon. I hate him. Okay.
And so in all of this, Lisa Frank and James Green divorced in 2005, at which time James Green...
You'd think.
And Rhonda, who had been involved for years at that point, they forced employees to take sides in the divorce. So it was...
Oh, my God. Honestly, like, I have heard some horror stories from a friend who worked at a company where, like, there was a husband and wife, like, CEO, CFO, some sort of, like, upper...
Mm-hmm.
tier thing. And they were very much together, like, not divorced, et cetera, et cetera. But, like... I just remember even when she would talk about things that were not as salacious and crazy as what it sounds like you're about to dive into, being like, I cannot imagine working underneath a husband and a wife team. It's like, first of all, like, as just a person who doesn't like to take work home or home work, I don't like to cross the paths.
It would feel like a funny, like, mom and dad team or something.
Yeah, but, like, mom and dad are fighting again.
Exactly, like, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, I hate everything about this. So carry on. Help me, Rhonda. Help me, Rhonda.
Just a disaster. So basically what they're doing through the divorce is James Green and Rhonda are planning to start up a second company that will basically be identical to Lisa Frank Inc., but it will be called something else.
Yeah, they want to fuck Lisa over.
Right.
For sure.
Right.
Obvious pivot.
And so they're trying to get all of the employees so that even if Lisa wins the company in court, that she'll have no one left who knows what they're doing to work with her. And to that I say, like, you have such high turnover rates that, like, does it even matter at this point? But
honestly, no, you don't need these employees because everybody leaves every 2 seconds. And if you left these people with Lisa, they'd probably just leave her.
Exactly. Exactly. So everyone's going to have to replace everyone anyway. But they fight it out forever in court. And then there's, like, all of this tangled up courtship because of the people that they didn't pay, that the company has to pay before they can break the company apart, and the contractors that are owed money, and all of, like, former employees, like, innumerable former employees who are suing them, mostly just for wages that they're truly owed. But there are...
Just, like, actually for things that they worked for?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Just for wages and severance packages. I think there were a couple of... cases as far as, like, harassment goes, but
as it sounds like there fucking should have been,
as it should be, but mostly what happened was the Lisa Frank company got absolutely torn up on sites like Glassdoor and also, like, word of mouth in Tucson where they were headquartered.
Sure, I was gonna say, if they're out of the place, especially if it's, you know, a smaller city, like, if you're not just straight out of Manhattan in New York where everybody's hustling for a hustle, nobody's gonna go work there. It's like when somebody dates somebody and they're, like, a full asshole, it's like they can get away with that at a certain point. But depending on how large your community is, at some point, everybody knows you're a full asshole and nobody will date you.
Mm-hmm. Looking at you, Greek life. Anyway.
Looking at you. Anyway. Okay.
So then what's happening with them now? In 2012, Urban Outfitters decided to sell, like, Lisa Frank t-shirts.
Sure. Urban Outfitters is really reviving the nostalgia for truly people our age.
Yes. Yes.
Caboodles, Champion. What else has come back around?
A lot of fanny packs a long time ago, but yeah.
Fanny packs for sure. But, like, a lot of even the graphic tees that are, mm-hmm. like, Saved by the Bell graphics, etc. Like, Kelly Kapowski, that's not for the kids who grew up on Tumblr. They don't even know who she is.
No, it's not. It's really not. So yeah, they did the Lisa Frank line. And then they also sold her excess stock of, quote, vintage stationery pieces. So when Urban Outfitters was selling like Lisa Frank stationery paper, it was shit that was like left over from forever ago in the factory that they couldn't move.
That's actually a brilliant business move for both of them. Urban probably got that at a fucking cheap as shit. They called it vintage. Mm-hmm. And Lisa Frank was like, this is my dead stock. That, yeah. Like, honestly, like, why didn't they light it on fire at this point in time? That's actually a very savvy business move, like, for both brands.
Agreed. Because
I think it's clear from what you're saying that Lisa Frank is not doing well fiscally. And if you do a quick Google search, you would also be keen to, like, keenly aware that neither is Urban Outfitters. So carry on.
Mm-hmm. And then Lisa Frank wanted to sell maybe like some Christmas items or some calendars. And Urban has not responded to her requests, and they will not speak to Jezebel with comments. And this is
so Lisa basically was like, let's make this a permanent partnership, and Urban was like, no.
Yes, and that
they wanted her on the cheap deal from the dead stock, and like in the, like the nostalgic way, and then move on.
Yes, probably that. And then also, according to Karen, who we heard from before.
Oh, Karen.
Quote.
Seems like a great source.
They lose.
If that is your real name.
If that is your real name. Karen says that they lose relationships because they just aren't friendly with people. And so they're not able to maintain a lot of business connections. So basically,
well, that also reigns true. Like, maybe Urban folks didn't want to work with her again because it was a real fucking pain the first time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then as for where James Green is at, no surprise. He found Jesus.
Prison. Oh, no.
Are you ready?
Oh, no.
Are you ready?
Oh, God.
He's doing it again. So previously.
I just have to get in here for just a quick second.
I'm ready.
And say, there's nothing I dislike more than when someone who is fully reprehensible and just like a dislikable character claims like a turnaround through Jesus, but they are. Shout out to all you hardcore Christians, but I think when people quote unquote find Jesus, I'm not gonna say 9 times out of 10. I'm gonna roll it down to like 7.5 or 8 times out of 10.
Diplomatic of you.
When people have like a come to Jesus moment later in life, and it's people who have truly been a piece of shit, like mm-hmm. up until this point, it's again a marketing ploy. They're like, well, all communities hate me, but maybe the Christians who seem to be into forgiveness would get on this bandwagon. I could make some money.
So, to your point, Green, who was previously Jewish, converted to Christianity.
Oh, wow. Full conversion. I can't. The Christians are eating this up somewhere. The evangelicals probably. I'm sorry. I'm saying too much. Okay.
And he now sells religious-based stationery and t-shirt designs on his website, jameschristianman.com. One more time.
JamesChristianMan.com. Well, you're welcome. Maybe he'll get a couple traffic hits from this podcast episode that people will be Googling. I mean, I don't expect any people to buy, but like, I'm going to look this up. He'll at least get one hit and it will be mine because I need to know. Also, what a terrible domain. Go on.
I know. He also, on that website, shares his poetry, photography, and sculptures. One.
There's nothing I hate more than when people try and sell something and then also try and feign as an artist in 7 different mediums at the same time. Go ahead.
Yep. One of them is a giant sandcastle type creation of a crucifix. So you have that to look forward to.
Ugh. Like, you have Daytona Beach stations of the cross apparently to look forward to. Okay.
Yep. Yep. So James Green founded his business, Salvation LLC, a few months after leaving.
I can't believe that like LLC wasn't already taken.
I know.
Also, of course. Okay.
He did that a few months after leaving Lisa Frank, and Rhonda, former VP of Lisa Frank Inc., is now Salvation LLC's vice president.
So okay. First of all, these people need to stop shitting where they eat. I just like, I don't know. I mean, shout out to a family business. I love the vibe, but like, I personally, I don't think
no,
I,
this
I
is
love
two,
my family.
Like, egomaniacs just like running and creating another company.
No, I think it's dark. I think it's complicated enough when like, it's like, you know, yeah, just
Yes, it is dark. And speaking of dark and egomaniacal,
as a full outsider to family business, truly, as someone who's not in business with their family, so this, and I certainly would never, honestly, I can say here and now, I'm gonna go on the record, Jamie.
I'm ready.
You're my friend, so you could not want to do this if it were ever to happen, but I'm just going to give you permission. If I were to ever romantically couple with someone and then fully decide to, like, I'm not talking side hustle, like, fun little project, like, we decide to, like, can some vegetables together and sell them at the farmer's market.
Sure, yeah.
Just as a hobby. I'm saying we full decide to go into business together, like, hard, like, corporate, like, legal
major
things.
Yes, business.
Major business. Mm-hmm. You have permission to kill me.
Wow, okay. That is
That's
recorded.
How passionately I feel about it.
And it's
it.
Recorded. And we'll have witnesses. This is great.
Too many witnesses.
Could I even be convicted? Well, we'll see.
I mean, I gave you permission, but I still, to
I'll get a
what
good lawyer
I know, assisted suicide is, you know, still not legal. So
a good
be careful,
lawyer but. And a loophole is what I'm saying.
Okay. Good lawyer and a loophole. That's all you need. Good lawyers get it, Jamie. But, like, you probably don't need to because I will never do this. That's how passionately I feel about it.
So to wrap up on Lisa, just I want to touch on her egomania because a lot of this was focused on James Green. And while a terrible CEO and she should not have made her husband the CEO, Lisa Frank herself had her own issues.
Yeah, they both sound kind of like assholes based on the hearsay. And let's say that Napoleon James over here was truly like the real asshole. I mean, she made him the CEO of her company. So like, and he was also her husband. So like, there's like an enabling factor in there and just like something going on. And I don't know. I just, it seems, it doesn't line up for me.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it's a one party at fault. Truly knowing nothing other than you anecdotally telling me this story right now along with the listeners. But I just, like, don't think we can blame one of them. Okay.
No. Definitely. But I thought that this was interesting. And I just want to say, because I think this also says, like, what kind of boss she was. And by that, I mean, like, fairly delusional.
It sounds it, yeah.
So in a 2012 article or interview with The Daily, she said, quote, "In my own little way, I understood Michael Jackson. We think about..."
What? No, okay, let's rewind already. I'm already out. Tap, I'm going to take a hard tap out. What year did she say this?
2012.
Okay. I mean, y'all, listen.
She says, "We think about it a lot, how well known the name is, but I'm very, very low key. If I use my credit card and they go, 'Oh gosh, there's Lisa Frank who makes the stickers,' I go, 'Isn't that the craziest thing that I have the same name?'" So she thinks that she is kind of on the same fame level as Michael Jackson.
I mean, y'all, I can't.
I can't, and that's fine. And so just like, yeah, a little peek into like how
Sit
she thinks of herself.
Sit down your white Midwestern father. Say, "Do you know who Michael Jackson is?" And they'll say, "Yes." And their opinions of him could waver. And you say to that man, "Do you know who Lisa Frank is?" And they'll say, "No."
No. They will not. Last thing I want to say about Lisa specifically is, so she has two sons, and have I told you this before?
I listen, all of this is new to me. Viewers, you're not watching us. Thank God, honestly, I look crazy
so
right now.
So do I.
But all of that said, I want you to know that the reactions on this podcast, whether you believe it or not, are real, even though this isn't live. I knew nothing about the Romneys. I knew nothing about Shorty James. I knew nothing about a woman being named Rhonda. I knew nothing about evangelical Christianity going into here. And I knew nothing about Lisa Frank thinking she was as famous as Michael Jackson. So, like, all of my reactions are genuine, and Jamie, I don't know what you're talking about next, but I'm also ready to genuinely react, so go ahead.
This is not related to workplace culture, but I just have to share it. So Lisa and James have two sons, and can you guess their names for me? Their last name is Green.
their names. Well, like, I kind of assume that James is, like, an egomaniac enough that one of them is, like, James the Second.
That's a great guess, but their names are Hunter and Forest Green.
Wait, they're both...
Like,
wait,
the crayon colors.
Wait, what is their their last name is Green?
G-R-E-E-N. Green, like the color.
And so they're named Hunter and Forest, like they're named two shades of green.
Yes, yes, yes. Forever, they are named two shades of green.
I want to go ahead and say, I actually think the first names Hunter and Forest are strong, great names.
They're fine.
But if your last name is Green, watch I just it. Like step off.
Just this is step wrong. Off.
This is so wrong, especially if like the family business, which shouldn't have been a family business, is like somehow an illustration. Like this is truly like they like had out. They're like, you know, it'd be really romantic if we got out the Pantone chips and named their child. Like this is gross. I'm surprised one of their kids isn't named Pantone 1407. Honestly.
I am too. And to that point, Hunter and Forrest share their names with a cartoon leopard and tiger.
Oh, no, because I don't know the names of them, but I am, I guess, kind of aware that on the low, Lisa Frank's like animals like the pandas and the tigers and the unicorns actually
names.
Do have names. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do your own Google search on that. It's not worth my time.
Yeah. So that wraps like my rundown of the Lisa Frank company. And I came across that article honestly a long time ago and forgot about it until recently when we did the 90s nostalgia episode and I was reminded.
Wow. Yeah, wow.
But it just felt, I feel like that article hit me differently recently in light of like some COVID-19 quarantine shit. Because obviously work is very different for everyone right now. And I think it just kind of got my gears turning about like work environment and the fact that we are, even if we're working from home, like that is still a workplace environment. And so like,
yeah.
While there are certain things that we may clock when we are physically at work as like inappropriate or poor management or something, I'm interested to talk about kind of like how that translates to home as well.
Yeah, I love that you're bringing this up and I love that we're acknowledging like where we are and like the quarantine juju of all of this, because I think in the themes of like pranks and some of our other recent episodes, even cryptozoology, we've been trying to do like a little bit of lighthearted stuff on the podcast. Honestly, selfishly, I think for ourselves that
it's
we
mostly
were like
selfish.
Yeah, I mean, and I hope you're enjoying, and I hope you, sweet listeners, also wanted like a break from like the heaviest of topics where we were like, let's talk about depression or like, you know, something intense. But we were like, let's talk about some kind of lighthearted bits of psychology. But yeah, I think I'm somebody who's certainly been engaged in how work has changed for me and like for my company and for people who work for my company who aren't me and like how all of it's different. And then also as just like a member of, you know, the Chicago community, because this is where I live, and somebody who patronizes all sorts of businesses, I've definitely been doing my reading. As you know, I like to read a fair amount of like local journalism. There's like something I subscribe to that is very keeps it local and not the Tribune, you know.
Yeah.
No shade thrown to the Tribune. Sure. They do good stuff too, but I have clocked some things of just people being interviewed about like businesses handling things really well and companies handling things in ways that like when I heard the details, I was like shocked and horrified. And I was like, that sucks, because that's like a place I like to go. But like, ooh, this feels some kind of way. And like, I do think to your point, this is something in particular, like we can laugh about Lisa Frank shit and like there's some shit to laugh about that's fully crazy. Looking at you, Forrest and Hunter. Hello. Shout out Rhonda.
Yeah.
But I just like, there's something to this that like does have like the heavier gravity of just like, fuck, it's I don't know, like it weighs harder.
It does. And it brings up like, how am I being treated by my employers kind of thoughts. And right now that's like a really sensitive thing.
Well, and I think interpersonally, I'm sure a lot of us have like appreciated this in our own lives on like an interpersonal way outside of the workplace, whether we're talking to our parents and siblings or we're talking to our romantic partners or our friends, where perhaps we feel like on different scales of how we react to things in what like truly is like a crisis. Mm-hmm. And maybe you're on the end of where like you don't feel like it's a crisis, or like you feel like your friends don't feel like it's a crisis, or you feel like you have like a mismatch of just like expectations, mm-hmm, and feelings about things. And that's hard to navigate. And I think to your point, when thrown kind of into the trenches, it can be a very sobering time to be like, oh fuck, like maybe I thought that I was cared for more at work than I am, or juxtaposition to that, like, mm-hmm, in a positive way. Oh fuck, like, wow, work, I'm in a really good situation, and like maybe I haven't been as like grateful for the circumstances or realized, mm-hmm, how cared for I was at work until shit got really tough and like, right, things ended up okay. And I think both of those things are happening right now, not for Lisa Frank, no, but for a lot of people,
and some hybrid situations of like, okay, from a corporate perspective, like this feels like it's being mishandled, or it feels like maybe the small people are getting stepped on, but maybe, I don't know, I've had a lot of like really positive interactions with like direct supervisors that maybe aren't like in line with my feelings about like whole companies. And like anecdotally from hearing from friends, I feel like there are a lot of like middle managers who are really squeezed right now between like the pressures above and like caring for the people below. And so I don't know, there's a lot of shit hitting the fan. But I think that, I guess I'm trying to say that sometimes people who are stuck in the middle are like doing what they can, and that like, mm, maybe you're in a third option situation where like your company sucks, but like maybe you can find someone to like root for you, because there are probably a handful of people who would go to bat unless your corporate culture really, really sucks, in which case you may have to leave.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's a really interesting thing to think about, right? Because, I feel like super fortunate right now that I feel so supported, and like shit is really hard at work right now. Just circumstances. Yeah,
your workload
given
is crazy, but I feel like the culture and like the pressures are more in check than I expected them to be for you.
Oh, and also like I want to like from a personal anecdotal like perspective, I'm just somebody who at every job, not just the one I'm working right now, I've always really been of the mindset of like, my job is like not really this big part of my worth or how I define myself, and not in a shitty way, because I think I have a lot of friends who I think find a greater sense of personal fulfillment from their, mm-hmm, work, either because of what it is or just because of who they are, mm-hmm, and I've never felt that. And
yeah, work is not your identity, and that's totally fine.
No, I hang my hat. It's never felt to me up until this point that it'll be the reason I ever get out of bed. And I've had friends, like, you know, people who know me deeply and well, say like, oh, like, well, you just haven't found the thing that does it for you. And truthfully, like, I don't know that what pays my bills is ever going to be the thing that does that for me, but I'm open to it. Mm-hmm. But I did have this kind of sobering moment as somebody who's always just been like, my job is just my job.
Yeah.
That like the threat of like maybe not getting to do it, I felt like a very sobering moment of like, oh wow, I can't imagine like this being taken away from me. And I think it made me realize on like a deeper level how much I like really actually do like my job right now.
Oh,
and
that's
certainly
great.
Yeah, that has been really positive. And, like, certainly I've worked jobs before that I've fucking hated, mm-hmm, and where I haven't felt supported by people. But I also didn't realize in, like, certain negative situations, like, maybe how dirty it was until I was out of it.
Yes,
which
me
is
too.
Also a really sobering thing. And I think it's so wild because, like, I think I shouted it out earlier on, or done something, maybe when we recorded something else tonight. Who's to say? Have we done two episodes tonight? You can't know. But we certainly talked about, when we talked about a money feelings kind of juju earlier this season, that for 3 out of 4 Americans, finances and money are the most stressful thing in their life. And I think, mm-hmm. like, with the economy taking crazy shifts and the level of uncertainty, I would say it's probably 4 out of 4 Americans at this point in time mm-hmm. that we're all worried about money, like, easily.
Yeah.
But all of that to say, it's just... it's hard to negotiate the emotions with that, because how do you deal with burnout, like we've talked about mm-hmm. before, or like a really toxic work culture, when it's also how you buy your groceries, or also even how you do the fun stuff with your friends?
Mm-hmm. Or and, especially right now, when like getting a different job would probably be semi-impossible.
I mean, depending on what industry you're right. in and like what the outlook is, yeah, it could be really fucking hard. And that's a really interesting thing to point out, because there's a comedian I listen to do some other stuff out there in the sphere. And at the beginning of Corona quarantine stuff, before perhaps it felt as serious as it does now,
mm-hmm.
he even was saying in kind of a jovial, lighthearted way, but I appreciated, you know, he's talked about different times, you know, before he went, he lives in New York, and before he went like full stand up, he was like selling insurance. And then he kind of had that sobering moment that it really was a light switch for him, that he was like, I have to fucking try and do stand up and like do this thing that I want to do. And now that's how he's making a living, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. Shout out to people like that's somebody that I'm inspired by, but also I don't relate to, because I don't work something that like is, do you know what I mean? Like, that is yeah, his well,
for
jam.
Some people, like, I think that sometimes, like, your passion for certain people needs to be protected by, like, that it needs to not have the pressure of making you money. Like, it needs to be
and
something you can recharge in.
Yeah, and I like that you said that, because I think that's something I grapple with as just a sidebar, is, like, kind of that millennial side hustle culture that I'm like, no, like, whenever, like, I do a lot of cooking, and people are like, you need to make a blog. And I'm like, that's the first way that cooking becomes unfun for me, is when y'all are expecting a blog post or something. Mm. I'm like, I'm just going to do it willy-nilly as I want to. But anyway, I digress. But to this point, he said something that he goes, you know, and I really think this is true, at least maybe through my own experiences, he goes, I think a lot of people are maybe going to have that moment that I had when I was like, I got to do stand-up full-time during this Corona time and this COVID yep. and this quarantine time, that either people, and I've had this moment where I've been like, oh fuck, I think I had like a little bit of a come to Jesus, that I was like, oh, like I actually really enjoy my job maybe more than I consciously thought I did, until I really had to think about it.
What a relief.
Be like, oh, I might not have it, which is a beautiful relief. But I also have friends who, like, my job has become more high pressure right now, but I have a lot of friends who their job isn't threatened mm-hmm. by what's happening with the economy, like some people who are attorneys, etc.
Oh yeah.
But their job has become lower pressure, and the turnaround time and the expectations are like less crazy, and now they're working from home and not having to go into the office all the time, mm-hmm. just not a normal thing for them. And they're kind of like, oh fuck, like my life got easier. And I kind of think like they're gonna be, again, some more, like, I just think perspectives and person to person are going to change. I think there are people, like, in the service industry who are like, oh, fuck, this feels unstable and I got to get out of it. I also have friends who bartend for a living.
See a decline. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I really think it's a double-edged sword. I think it's really the person and the where you work. I also have, like, good friends who are, you know, bartender, serve, who said to me in this time that they were like, damn, like, I really miss work. And honestly, like, I don't think I'll ever complain a day in my life about going again. And this has been really sobering.
Wow.
And that's one industry, right? And then I've also heard, you know, the flip side of being like, I gotta fucking get out of here because I'm not being taken care of, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I think it depends on your culture and who you work for, all the things, and like, and who you are and what motivates and drives you, because we're all different.
Yeah.
But I also have thought about, I'm like, we're having these experiences like, wow, like, you know, people have had work ripped away from them, either be by being furloughed or laid off. That's, you know, changed our perspective. And then the other side of that are people who are like, oh, I got it so much easier right now. And what happens when they have to go back to like, quote unquote, normal?
Mm-hmm.
And that feels harder. Like, then do you have to reconcile that you actually kind of hate your job?
I think for a lot of people, yes. I think that a lot of, and this is anecdotal information just from people who I've talked to.
Sure, we're all speaking clinically right now. Yeah.
But I feel like the temperature with a lot of service industry people right now, servers and bartenders specifically, a lot of us do it as like a financial means because we really would prefer to be doing something else. And that is not true for everyone. But because it's like a flexible schedule, there are definitely like a lot of servers who would rather be doing a different thing. And there are a lot of people who I have talked with during this time who are using this hiatus where like we can't go to the restaurant or like our hours are so reduced that like we're only working two shifts a week, but using this time to kind of prepare to switch gears into maybe like a different industry that they'd like to be in. I want to be careful about how I say this because something that bothers me and bothers other servers a lot is when you act like serving is not a real job.
I felt that. I just want to say, like, I felt that in retail too, that people be like, oh, well, they got a real job. I'd be like, bitch, this is my real job, you know?
Right. And so I'm not saying that right here. I'm just saying that our industry was like turned on its head just now. And a lot of us have other passions that we're currently exploring. And so I think for a lot of people, that might mean a career change. And me personally, like I would love to shift out of restaurants. We'll see if that's like something that could happen. But this little taste of not having to serve the public for me personally feels like a big relief, if I'm honest.
I mean, that's totally honest. And I think there are also like, there are things that come with that if you're like in a service hustle job, like in general, that then there was a point in time where things were getting real, but you were still working, that you were like, now mm-hmm. my job feels dangerous. Well, that's emotional.
Absolutely. And that is like, I made the decision not to go to work anymore because of doctor's advice, and I'm immune.
Yeah, you're immunocompromised. Shout out. God bless you. Yes. But.
So I am not going into work, but my workplace is still open. And so that was something I was doing until about a week ago. And, it was hard to get a read culturally on like if I felt like it would be okay for me to ask if I could leave until this was over or not. And luckily, like that was more than fine. But I think in maybe other work cultures, maybe that is not as okay. How do you feel like your work environment, even though like obviously you're working from home, you still have contact with like people who you work with. Do you feel like your work culture has changed during this time, or like it's pretty much the same?
No, I mean, I think it's definitely changed in some capacity, is for sure, because who I work for right now, like there were people who were furloughed who were like getting a percentage of their income, but like that's like really emotional when teams are split up and and workloads are split up and like some people stay and some people don't, and like that's just like a very emotional situation, you know, like how could it not be? And to like be like, yeah, we have to keep the ship running, but like we have to do it with flying at half mast, and like if we're flying at half mast, like less people, like that's just like a very emotional, intense thing. And I'm on one side of that coin where I'm still working, but other people are on the other side of the coin where they're not still working. And I think both sides are emotional. And honestly, like I don't know that I will have a full sense of how it has like truly affected like our culture as a company until we're on the other side of this, and then we're operating whatever the new normal is and people are coming back, etc. Because it's been emotional for me in one way, but I know it's been emotional for people who aren't there in a different way. What will that look like when we're all under like the same roof, team fully functioning, etc. again, like I don't know. I will say, as like somebody who's like, you know, in the trenches now, and they do feel like trenches, that I feel like super supported and
that's
cared
excellent.
For and communicated to, which
it can I be like really the only relief sometimes.
Well, it yeah, I'm so appreciative for it because from anecdotal feedback from friends and like also like things that you read in the media about like certain companies, mm-hmm. et cetera, and businesses locally, I'm like, wow, that's like not everyone's story. And that is, it sucks, but it's also like there are people who have done a shitty job and like haven't done right by their employees. And there are also people who have done literally the best that they can and have had to lay off everything, like every person, you know what I mean? Everything, mm-hmm. every role, whatever.
Right.
And it sucks because of course that's a thing. Like it's not that person's fault. It's truly the fault of like this enemy that we can't name, or we can like tell you it's like a virus that. We
yeah. This have is all one time. It's on. Like no one's fault theoretically.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's not what like in the same way that we'd be like, I wasn't financially prepared for a global pandemic.
For
neither
that
was
hurricane.
Your employer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like neither was your employer. And so it's like, you can't be mad about that. But I do think there are things with like, attitude of how you handle that mean mm-hmm. everything. And to the tie back of the Lisa Frank situation, like it's clear that like attitude means everything, and like
yes,
nobody works well under fear and ultimatums and having to fucking
threats.
Buy your like someone porn at the office.
Yeah.
I mean, that's assault. That's crazy. I mean,
okay.
It's like we're laughing, it's not funny,
it's
but
not.
Like I'm just like,
it's just
I just
so
can't
absurd.
believe. It's just so absurd, and I can't believe it's tied to Lisa Frank. Then I just imagine, like, unicorn porn. It's a whole thing.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I know, it's like a whole spiral. 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, I mean, you do just, like, really think about a lot of things, and it's very sobering. And I think that, I don't know, to, like, the Lisa Frank point, I'm sure you imagine there are a bunch of people came in who were, like, graduating college and like we're like 22 and Lisa Frank was the hottest shit and they got a graphic job there and then it was mm-hmm. miserable and that was their first experience of the workforce.
Yeah.
There are also people who are having their first experience of the workforce and just got laid off. Like,
oh yeah, you're right.
And then there are people who have like been like, I've been here 40 years and just got laid off. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know what I mean? Like, and there are like people who are half there and half not, people who are having to work harder than ever, people whose jobs got quote unquote easier. And none of like, and it's not bad if you got laid off, and it's not bad if you're still being compensated and your workload apparently is easier or like feels that way. It's just, I think it's making a lot of us reevaluate a bunch of shit that like we weren't ready to come to terms with probably.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely it is. And to your point about maybe some people feeling like it's easier now to work from home, I was reading that a lot of major companies are considering making most of their employees telecommuters, so like working from home consistently, because it will save companies like innumerable dollars on office spaces.
Well, I will say I like am somebody who already worked in a role that I was like 50% of the time remote,
mm-hmm.
and I think like we got pushed even further as a company. And I think a lot of companies got pushed to remote who've never done it before. And then they went, wait, fuck, maybe I don't have to like pay for this building in downtown
right.
Manhattan.
And
we
they
can
did
run
it because they had to with the servers
yeah.
and stuff.
But to your point, it's like people who get, you get pushed to, oh, we have to do it this way now. It's like, then how do we do it? And the restaurants who have never done carryout before,
mm-hmm.
or
how
who are selling like meal kits or like doing delivery that never did delivery. I'm like, what parts of that business model maybe stay in some capacity or happen once a month in a way that
oh, yeah.
supplements their income? It's
my
like,
work is going to keep pizza kits. We're doing it now.
Yeah.
We're going to keep it.
I mean, I think a lot of things for a lot of folks will change. And I don't know, part of me sometimes when I say it feels like, is this naive? And just truly from like a workforce perspective, forget the social things, because that's a whole nother conversation and
mm-hmm.
episode, perhaps, who's to say? Mm. But I do think there's like some real thought in that, like, I have no idea what the new normal will look like, but I do think there will be quote unquote a new normal. I think
yeah.
there's stuff that's going to stay that we didn't expect. I think there's stuff that's going to go that we didn't expect. And I think people will both feel compelled to like stay at their job perhaps, and also feel compelled to leave their job.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it will be a time of reevaluation regardless.
Yeah.
I have to pee real quick, and then you have like one more segment that I want to do, and then a verbal game.
Perfect. I love it.
Excellent.
I love this episode.
Thank you. It was really fun to.
I feel like you were destined to do this one. I like that we talked about Lisa Frank and then we got existential.
Me too. Okay, I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back.
Welcome back to the program.
Okay, so with maybe the assumption or the possibility that a lot of us could be in more frequent work from home situations.
I think that's real. I think the world is going to see a shift to that. So go on.
Yeah, I really think that we will. I took a little time to skim some various Psychology Today, etc. articles, just to figure out, like, hey, if our new work environment is home, like, what are the things that we should do to improve our mood and our work environment and how we feel about that? Because we're concerned about, like, feng shui and, like, openness and shit at the office. Quick side note, open office plans are actually not as good for productivity as closed off offices.
I've recently seen studies about this, so I love that you're bringing it up. Also, as somebody who's generally, as you, Jamie, would describe me, Austin, incredibly sensitive to her environment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love this because actually, as somebody who even, I'm 100% work from home right now, but pre-corona juju, 50% work from home, I don't think that I've actually ever fully nailed down how I should physically be working from home. So I'd love to talk about this more.
And this is probably all stuff that, like, if you tried, you could guess. And I'm not going to read from anything directly because it's boring, but know that I do have sources and there was intelligence of other people behind the assembling of this list. So
I love it when you say it that way, but don't cite anything. Go on.
Okay. Well, it's just I read a bunch of stuff and then I wrote down what I remembered. Anyway,
I'm not giving you a hard time. Carry on. Carry on.
So what are some ways that we can improve our physical work environment? The most obvious and the most important, arguably, is natural light. So if you can get yourself situated by a window, do that. If you cannot, make sure that you have ample overhead lighting, lamps, whatever you need. Candles, perhaps. Make sure that your home...
I have a candle note to make on this. I don't want to interject too early, but let me know.
Okay, well, you can go ahead. I was just going to say plants also. Natural lights, plants in the evening or afternoon, maybe candles. Go ahead about candles.
Well, okay. So I love this on the natural light. I'm going to chime in on my own issues for just a quick moment. Mm-hmm. When I work from home, I usually work at my dining room table. Part of me feels like I should record in what I lovingly refer to as my third room. It's where I record the podcast for acoustic reasons. And it's kind of, quote unquote, what maybe one would consider the office of my place. But I call it the third room. It's not the office. I don't have an office. I have the third room.
Right.
So.
Keep it fun.
Keep it fun. There's a fucking lead or iron or whatever 3 nailed onto this door for a reason. Anyway, that said, this room doesn't get enough natural light compared to my dining room, living room, open area. Feel like this is a much darker room, so I feel validated that you're talking about natural lighting being a thing. But the candle notation I wanted to mentioned had literally nothing to do with light. I was recently on a really fun Zoom of a bunch of babes and ladies and during this time that a really good friend of mine organized, and I was pleased to be invited to, where someone brought up the concept of one of the things they do at work from home. They read about it somewhere out there on the internet and found it to be an effective thing, was that when you, you know, so much of memory and sensory experience is for sure triggered by smell, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they talked about when you work from home, lighting a specific candle when you start work.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you finish work, extinguishing it so that that scent kind of means like it's time for business.
Yes. And on that note, that's part of why it's important to still get dressed. And that doesn't have to mean like putting on like an outfit you would actually wear to an office, but like maybe make the transition like from sweatpants to leggings, like so that your body has like a marker.
I'm not great at this.
I'm not always great at it either. I will say that since I've stopped going to work, this part of my rules for myself has definitely become more lax, but I feel like I've felt some adverse effects from it. I feel like groggier or something if I stay in sweats all day.
I think that's a real thing. I think sometimes I have these moments where I'm like, I could just take a nap right now. And part of me wonders that if I had ever really transitioned out of what I slept in, if I would feel the same way.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes really just like a shower and like a new pair of clothes. I told you I'm gonna wear jeans later this week, and it's going to really feel like a special day.
It's going to feel like a special occasion. I have a good friend who I feel like I've seen just via the internet calls, like really just like dressed normally this whole time. And I both admire and question her sanity. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So other physical things, like I mentioned, getting dressed can be really important. Temperature of your home, like if you were in an office situation and someone was keeping the thermostat really low, like, and everyone hated it, you would hate that. So like, don't do that to yourself either. I understand like affordability, obviously, but just like get your environment comfortable, the light, the plants, everything. Make sure you're not too hungry. And then I wanted
to truly advice. We can all enjoy at all times. Yeah,
it is at all times. And then also I wanted to talk about, the interpersonal or intrapersonal dynamics of perhaps working at home. So
say more.
A big part of the work environment, as we learn from the Lisa Frank story and our own lives, is the people who you work with and like what their temperament is and how that sets the tone for your work environment. If you're at home and you're being your own supervisor, I think it's super important to make sure that you're not like accidentally being a drill sergeant for yourself.
Oh, interesting.
Like, remember, if you're your own boss or if you're your own supervisor right now, like remember to treat yourself like a respected employee. So like, are you asking too much of yourself? Are you giving yourself short breaks if/when you're overwhelmed? Are you creating good boundaries around your work time so that like working from home doesn't feel like now just your whole life is your job and also it's invading your house, but rather like a time for work and like a time to like legitimately close the laptop, because you wouldn't want a supervisor to ask that either. And so it feels invasive.
No, I love that you brought this up.
Yeah.
There's something to this that like, I will say in general, for me at least, I have like real feelings about when I like close and like unplug the charger on my laptop. Even when I'm fully at home, I put it back in my backpack, which is like my work bag.
Mm-hmm.
And something about the ritual of putting my laptop in my backpack feels like, and now I've retired for
it's like
the
when
day.
Mr.
Like,
Rogers
really
changes.
Put it to bed.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, Mr. Rogers changing
into
the sneakers
sweater.
And the sweater.
Mm-hmm.
That is a real moment and something we can truly all appreciate. Fred Rogers, you trendsetter in so many ways.
But I think
ways.
We need those markers. And then
we do.
The last thing I wanted to add was, and this is specifically for people who are maybe entrepreneurs or like running their own business or something, but if you are your own boss, are you giving yourself enough resources? And what I mean by that is like, if you have no supervisor, who do you go to when you have questions or when you feel overwhelmed? Like if there's no one above you, And so obviously, like, there's not a lot you can do, but you can create a list of professional or friendly contacts you could reach out to for mutual support, and maybe you offer them that same support at another time. Or you could even just have a list of people to field questions to about certain things, and that could alleviate some feelings of overwhelm.
I also love that you mentioned this about, like, people who are entrepreneurs or, like, their own bosses. That's not who I am or, like, the role I embody in my paid work life. But there are people who I'm good friends with or really admire who are in those roles. And there's somebody I've always enjoyed, like, from afar via, like, some podcast stuff and just, like, their work, named Marley Grace. And she wrote a little, like, do you call it a booklet or, like, a book? I don't know. But she wrote, like, almost like a toolkit, but it's, like, it's a book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called How to Not Always Be Working. Where, mm-hmm. And it's truly, like, written for the creative artist entrepreneur kind of type, that it's, like, cool, so you're your own boss and, like, your shit is creative. And, like, how do you live a life in that you're not always working?
Right.
And,
right.
Which I think it has so much value and is so important. You have to designate time. So it really 100%.
And it's really hard, especially with creative things or, like, yeah, if you don't have someone to tell you, like, good job, go home, then it's can be really difficult probably to tell yourself that.
100%.
So in conclusion, if you are in a Lisa Frank industry situation, whether you're working from home and that attitude's coming to you through your telephone, or if you're physically going there because they don't respect the quarantine, just go ahead and leave. I'm going to just say,
never buy porn for your boss's husband. Just, that's a flat rule. That's, yeah.
If your boss's husband demands that you bring him pornography, do not attempt to learn coping strategies for your situation. Just leave.
No, you gotta go. You gotta go.
Yeah. So with that, do you have any other questions about Lisa Frank, my findings on workplace environments? There is more we didn't have time for, but this felt like enough.
I mean, there's always more that we don't have time for or more that we didn't even know. And I'll just say I'm thrilled to somehow learn that Lisa Frank was like a one percenter who chilled with the Romneys. Like, mm-hmm. That's wild. I had no idea. And I'm saddened about the folders that I consumed coming from such a toxic workplace. And I hope that the young 20-something graphic designers who fueled my second grade dreams are doing okay right now.
I hope they are too. And last thing I want to say, I forgot to say this. Just if you are in like a terrible work environment that you can't leave, it can be really helpful.
Because that's real. That's the thing, we can cavalierly say, like, you got to get out of there, but that's not always the circumstance.
But it's not always a circumstance. So just like a quick couple of like tips from these things that I came across. Remember that people will gaslight and confuse you in toxic spaces. And so a way to combat that is to go over like legit like facts and data in your head, and maybe don't like pop off about this, but data is hard to dispute. So if someone is making you feel crazy, just pay attention to hard facts and what is happening, and like quietly know that you are not insane. You can do that without being combative, but just to like keep your personal sanity.
And that's truly advice we can enjoy in our professional and personal lives. If you feel mostly like a rational person and good in your mental health and space, but there is someone that you have words with who makes you feel like your emotions are quote unquote crazy, hysterical, invalid, maybe question that relationship.
Yes, exactly. And another one, and this is advice that I need to take as well, but it can be good to vent, but vent with a time limit. Like, go ahead and set that time limit ahead of time, like 6-7 minutes, whatever it is.
That's true. And venting is a firm external process over here. Venting is great and it fuels things for me and it's important, but it's not somewhere I want to live indefinitely. So setting a parameter around that is always good.
Yeah, it crosses the line into like taking up too much of your mental energy. And the goal really, if you're in a toxic environment, is to like try to not also be there mentally when you're not there physically. So
Ayo.
It's tough. Anyway, shall we cue the vibraphone and pivot to a verbal game?
I love a verbal game. Fucking cue it.
Here we go. So, tonight, here's the scenario. You are working for Lisa Frank, And
God help me.
I would like to know if you would rather work in the office / factory / physical building with her, where she can pop into your office and so can James at any time.
Oh, God.
James. Anytime. Or Rhonda.
Help me, Rhonda. Help me, Rhonda.
Or would you rather work from home, but know that your home office is bugged and maybe there's a camera that Lisa, James, and Rhonda will watch and listen to whenever they would like?
Oh, easily I would go to the office. And I truly think this is a no-brainer for me in this moment, in that, so I used to manage retail stores, and with that comes service industry hours, which in retail are typically not as like late, depending on your vibe and like what you're doing, because sometimes they can be even all-nighters, which is a whole nother vibe, but are not as late as food and bev.
They're anyway, all it's not invasive, a though, and like don't get They're me started on overnights and like that's
totally. And so there were times that, you know, at jobs that I worked at, you know, I'd work somewhere until like midnight, and then I'd have to be back there between 6 and 8 a.m. the next day, whatever it was. Right, a clopen, affectionately. And it's so hard to have a separate, you know, personal and professional life when you're in that. And for me, Austin Williams, like as a person, I just really learned in my early mid-20s that that did not serve me and was like not a space I could be in, because I don't compartmentalize super well. So like if work sucks really hard for me, it's hard for me for that to not come home with me. But I will say, as somebody who's now pivoted to like the 8 to 5 hours, it is so much easier, even if like work's really hard or my personal life feels stressful at any given point in time. It does feel more compartmentalized because of the structure and the routine of the schedule. And the thought of being bugged in my home to me sounds like the worst parts of my work coming home with me. And maybe this is to, like, I guess to my point, and maybe it's something that's hard for a lot of folks who never work from home right now or are doing it more than usual. All of a sudden, your work is in your home. And God, that's a different kind of emotional and stressful, especially neither one of us are that person. But shout out to my friends with children.
Jesus, like, yeah.
I mean, bless you, because not only are you trying to manage your own interpersonal, like, at-home juju and your career and life, you're also trying to somehow, like, fit children into both the home and the work at the same, I truly can't imagine. And perhaps
children that like need to be educated right now.
Right. I mean, I don't know how old your kids are. Not all of you specifically. Some of you I do. But I just, I feel a great deal of empathy there. And the thought of work having any kind of onus over my physical space truly does make me want to hurl a little bit. So it's a quick pivot to being in a dark professional situation. I would rather embody that, but keep it fully out of my home if possible. Would you make the same call, or would you do something different?
I would do the same thing for the same reasons. And I also just wanted to add that in kind of the feel of bringing your work into your home, something that I made the mistake of in college a lot, but like now that I don't have a laptop, I cannot make this mistake. But
are you going to talk about working in bed?
It's so helpful to not ever, ever work in bed. Like, just don't do it. It will ruin your bed. Like, it's not about your work quality. It's about that, like, later when you get into that bed, it will feel like you're going to work and it will not feel like you can relax. So
that's real. And I'm going to take this to even probably a more controversial place. But you know what? We're controversial sometimes on this podcast. I'd like to do it there. This is the same reason why I don't believe like in like watching TV or like having televisions in the bedroom. And I get it.
Oh, yeah. Some there's studies wanna, like, about this, though. Yeah, it's a bad idea.
People
want
to spoon up and like watch a movie with their boo and fall asleep to it. But I just like, I really believe in like the separation of screens and the bedroom. And like, to your point, like work and the bedroom, I like, if I'm not fucking or sleeping, I don't want to be in my room.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some of this stems from I was not a kid who was like a hangout in your room, playing your room kid.
Mm-hmm.
And it truly drove my sophomore year in college roommate perhaps insane that I was always in the living room. I think it did. I don't it know actually. But she was like a hangout in your room kind of person. And I'm like, if it is like me in my apartment, even now at this point in time, if I am not fucking or sleeping, I'm not in my room. Spend no time in there. And the rest of it, if I'm having leisure time in the day, it has to be on the couch. Like, it has to be in the living room. It has to be in the dining room. It just has to be anywhere that's not there. And I do really believe that there's something poignant about the mental separation there. But I do, to your point, think it can be kind of easy, especially in this work from home environment, to just like be laying up in your sweatpants and like answering emails from like a propped up pillow on your king size.
Yes.
Bless and you if you have feels, a king size. It sounds nice.
Absolutely. It feels easier to do that, but that little bit of effort to separate your space will really, really do wonders. And I will say that like having a desktop computer is a pain in the ass, but honestly, I think that it like helps me create like some solid boundaries around my work time.
Mm, and I think to that too, this is also a PSA. Don't eat in bed. That's also weird.
Yeah,
don't
that's not a good door to open.
I mean, bed crumbs for starters, but second of all, just you're confusing spaces again.
You are. You confuse your body, confuse your mind. Anyway, hopefully we have not confused your bodies or your minds. If we've confused your bodies, please get at me and explain how.
Honestly, if we've confused your bodies, let us know. I'm interested. Okay.
But where can they let us know about their confused bodies?
As always, if we've confused your bodies, you can let us know on the internet via email at whyareyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyareyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And thanks for hanging with us in this quarantine, and thanks for some existential juju, but thanks for maybe hanging with us on some lighter topics as we manage our own emotions. We hope you're doing okay. Send us funny pictures, slide into the DMs.
Yeah, it's a time for online communities. We're here. Also, go ahead and tap that 5-star.
Mm. To everyone who's reached out, I'm into it.
I have too. Yeah, I mean, I have been. Whatever my syntax. Okay, it's enough talking for me for today, clearly. Good night.
Good morning. Good day. Good evening. Toodles.
Bye.